Hello and welcome into another episode of Locked on Wolves. Today on the show, the Coach of the Year voting results, why Chris Finch still finished lower than he should have. Also, reviewing the season of Jade McDaniels, how he performed relative to expectations. What can we expect the next step to be for the Timberwolves' budding two-way star? It's all coming up on the show. Welcome in. You are Locked on Wolves.
You are Locked on Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I am the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy hump day. Thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Of course, Locked On Wolves is free and available everywhere. That includes YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms. You can find the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. That includes Apple, Google, Spotify, and of course, our friends at Odyssey. You can also follow this show on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and my account, which is at BBeacon, and that's with two Bs, two Es, C-K-E-N. All right, today on the show, I want to talk about Coach of the Year voting results here first, and then I want to spend the rest of the show talking about Jade McDaniels. The way he finished the season is, understandably, everybody wants to talk about Jade McDaniels. Could he be the third piece of a future Big Three with Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards? Does he replace D'Angelo Russell in the next year-ish? At some point in the next 12 months or so, does he become that third kind of key cog in the Timberwolves, you know, core of the future? So I want to cover all that today in the show. Let's start with the Chris Finch stuff because the voting results are out now for the Coach of the Year voting. And I talked about this a while back. I guess it was probably on the Lockdown NBA podcast I did with Jackson Gatlin. I don't know, probably a couple months ago before the playoffs, certainly. And I talked about how Chris Finch needed to be in the discussion for Coach of the Year, that he should at least be in the top, you know, 3 to 5. He should be on ballots. We should be having this conversation because remember, I covered this last week when I kind of recapped the season, the win total over under stuff. The Wolves were not expected to be a very good team this year by most folks in the national media. Yes, my prediction was that they'd win 44 games. They won 46 games. My prediction was they would be in the play-in. They were in the play-in. But nationally, the over-under totals, all that stuff had them having a non-playoff season. And remember, the only two players on the roster that were new this year were Taurean Prince and Patrick Beverley. Everybody else, Leandro Bolmaro, sure, but he's like the 13th guy. So take the top 12 guys. Everyone else was on the team last year. Nate Knight, McKinley Wright, two-way players. Let's not count those guys. Let's not count Bolmaro. We're talking about the top 12 minutes getters on this roster this season. 1 through 12, two new players, Patrick Beverley and Taurean Prince. Prince wasn't even in the rotation all season. He was for most of the season. He wasn't for all the season. Patrick Beverley, I mean, obviously made a big impact. I'm not minimizing that at all, but he also missed 24 games this season. He essentially played three quarters of the year, actually less than that. So, just take those facts, take the facts that the Wolves over under, I believe the betonline.net line for them this year was 35.5 wins. A lot of sportsbooks had them really anywhere between 34.5 and 36.5. BetOnline had them at 35.5. The Wolves outperformed that easily, winning 46 games on the season. So if you're just going based on, a lot of the time Coach of the Year is the coach of a team that outperforms expectations or just has, you know, overcomes injuries to have a really solid season, or, you know, takes a team that was kind of meh 1 year to taking them to be really good the next year. I feel like Chris Finch kind of hits a little bit in all those areas, right? The roster didn't change much. It was the same core. And yet they went from, I mean, how many games did they win last season? Obviously, they weren't a playoff team. Let me get the total. They won what? Of course, it's not 23 games last year. 23 and 49. They go from 23 wins to doubling their win total, albeit in 10 more games because of the shortened season last year. But they go from 23 wins to 46 wins. The preseason expectation of 36.5 wins or 35.5 wins, according to Bet Online. The Timberwolves win 46. They outperform that by 11.5 wins. They have roughly the same roster. They become a playoff team. They continue to develop Anthony Edwards and Jade McDaniels, who we'll talk about here in just a minute. All of those things. And then you take overcoming the expectation, right? 11.5 games over over the, or I should say 10.5 games over the expected win-loss, the Vegas over-under total. Look at the other coaches on the ballot, and I'll read off here who was on the ballot and where Finch finished. I guess I could have started with that, but where Finch finished. And why I think Finch getting a little bit of from all these areas should have had him higher up on the ballot. So Monty Williams won, and deservedly so. Obviously, Phoenix had an incredible year. But again, what was the expectation for Phoenix after having been in the finals last year? It was that they were going to be really good. They won 64 games. Not that many teams in NBA history have won that many games. And yes, they also easily outperformed their over-under by even more than the Wolves did, right? Their over-under was 51.5. They outperformed it by 12.5. So fantastic year for Phoenix. Monty Williams deserves to be the coach of the year. I understand that. He got 81 of the possible 100 votes for first place. Second place was Taylor Jenkins with Memphis. I get that one too. I understand why he's second. They vastly outperformed what expectations were this year for the Grizzlies. They're supposed to win 41.5. They outperformed it by 14.5 wins to 56 wins. I would even understand putting Taylor Jenkins first on your ballot. That makes some sense to me. He got 17 first place votes. But then this is where it gets a little bit weird to me. The only other two coaches to win first place votes besides Monty Williams or Taylor Jenkins are Eric Spoelstra of the Heat and Ime Udoka of the Boston Celtics. Each of them got one first place vote. I don't know why anybody would vote for anyone besides Monty Williams or Taylor Jenkins in first place. It's absolutely mind-boggling because those two were head and shoulders the top two selections. The Heat, I mean, they were supposed to be good, right? Everybody knew that last season was kind of fluky for them. The over-under was 48.5 wins, and they won 53 games. So they beat it by 4.5 wins. I don't understand what was so fantastic about their season, other than some of the disappointments of the past couple of years, or I guess specifically last year for Miami, why they needed to end up, why Spoelstra is third in the voting. Udoka, I mean, he did a really good job pulling the Celtics out of a tailspin because midseason they looked like they were dead in the water, but that's another team they were supposed to be good. 45.5 for their preseason win total projection. They won 51 games. They outperformed it by 5.5. Good season, outstanding coaching job by Udoka to get them out of a tailspin. And remember when the Wolves beat them shorthanded in late December in the midst of that COVID disaster for the Timberwolves? I mean, the Celtics looked completely rudderless. And Udoka looked like he was in a really tough spot with that roster and guys not performing. And now all of a sudden he's fourth in coach of the year voting. And I understand that that was a good job. But again, relative to preseason expectations, JB Bickerstaff, former Timberwolves assistant, former Golden Gophers player, interim coach in a couple places, including Houston, the Rockets under when Rosas was there and Sachin Gupta was there as well in their front office. Outstanding start to the season for Cleveland. Really, really great start to the season for Cleveland. But they didn't finish all that strong. They didn't get out of the play-in tournament. Yes, they outperformed their preseason expectations by quite a bit, but they finished a couple games worse than the Timberwolves, and he was fourth in voting. He got four second-place votes this season. Tyronn Lue and the Clippers, he did a good coaching job because they didn't have Kawhi Leonard and they didn't have Paul George for long stretches this season. Sure, he was next in the voting. Jason Kidd in Dallas was after that. Nick Nurse was after that. Chris Finch was eighth in coach of the year voting. At the bottom of the list, he got four third-place votes. You cannot sit here and tell me his coaching job does not deserve to be ahead of Nick Nurse, Jason Kidd, Tyronn Lue, and I would say even Bickerstaff. You could certainly argue ahead of Ime Udoka, too. I absolutely think you can. Again, consider the expectations of each of these teams. The expectations were low for the Timberwolves. The Celtics were high. They under-delivered for much of the season, and it took an incredible run at the end. Remember, this isn't taking playoffs into account. This is regular season only for them to turn this into a respectable performance on the season for the Celtics. I'm not taking anything away from Udoka. I just think that we have to be considering the full context here. And Finch, eighth in coach of the year voting, is kind of crazy. I would have, if this were my ballot, I would have gone Monty Williams, Taylor Jenkins. And frankly, I mean, you could make an argument for Finch at third. I would probably put Udoka third and Finch fourth if I was doing an honest ballot. And I'd probably even put Bickerstaff ahead of Spoelstra. I love Eric Spoelstra. I just don't understand why he needs to be third in coach of the year voting. And then I'd probably go Spoelstra. And then beyond that, it doesn't really matter. Lue, Kidd, Nurse, fine. I'd probably put Lue ahead of both Kidd and Nurse for this season. That's what this is, the vote is for, right? So I think Finch eighth is nuts. I think that, or actually not even eighth, ninth, tied for eighth, I guess. Technically, in terms of the point total, he tied with Nick Nurse. Finch got four third-place votes. And Nurse got one second place vote and one third place vote. So he actually got was on more ballots than Nick Nurse, but tied for eighth in terms of points in the voting because second place votes are worth three and third place is worth one. I think it's crazy that he ended up tied for eighth. He should have been in the top four, worst case top five. But obviously if the Wolves make a jump, I don't think we can expect a Memphis-like jump next year, but a jump similar to what the Suns did last year, similar to what the Hawks did last year. And as long as they don't crash down to earth like the Hawks did this year, if there's some sort of a mini leap in there, then Finch will be in the top three. That's how this thing works. You have one more year to kind of prove that you belong there. And we're going to see a little bit more love for Chris Finch in terms of the award season next year. But at any rate, tied for eighth. Congrats to Coach Finch for being on the ballot, for making it onto the final tally. But he absolutely should have been a bit higher. All right, let's talk Jaden McDaniels for the rest of the show today. Before we get to Jaden, let's first talk about our friends over at Athletic Greens. Our next partner has a product I use literally every day. I started taking AG1 a few weeks ago because I didn't have time to be healthy in a lot of other areas, and I just wanted better gut health, more energy. I don't get enough sleep, and AG1 was the best way to go about that. If you're wondering what it is, I'll tell you. It's one delicious scoop that you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. You just mix it in with cold water. It's a special blend of ingredients that supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. Really, all the things. It's fantastic. It's lifestyle friendly. If you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, has less than a gram of sugar. There's no GMOs, no nasty chemicals, no artificial anything, and it still tastes good. It'll cost you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's definitely cheaper than your cold brew habit. Athletic Greens was created when the founder experienced a ton of gut health issues and ended up on a complicated supplement routine to recover. It cost him more than $100 a day, so he created Athletic Greens after experiencing how difficult it was to create an optimal nutrition routine all by yourself. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NBA Network. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/NBA Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Thanks again for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Make sure to go check out the Locked On NBA Big Board. Make that your second listen. Host Raphael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA Draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course, Big Boards. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. All right, let's talk Jaden McDaniels. So Jaden this year, the expectations were that he would continue to grow into a true two-way player. As a rookie, the expectations were very low. He slipped all the way to 28th in the first round in the 2020 draft. Remember, that was the mid-November draft. Also, of course, Anthony Edwards, Bolmaro were both acquired by the Timberwolves in that draft. And Jaden was a guy who was a five-star high school recruit, played one season for the University of Washington, was really good in non-conference play. There was chatter for him being a high lottery pick, like somewhere in the single digits draft in terms of draft where he'd be picked in the upcoming draft. He struggled in Pac-12 play. Once they got in a more difficult competition, he had some issues with technical fouls in his one season at Washington. So there were concerns to this point, seemingly unfounded, about attitude and demeanor on the court. There were, weirdly enough, questions about his defense because Washington plays a lot of zone. Would Jaden McDaniels be able to play one-on-one defense, have the toughness and the strength, not the size in terms of length, but the strength? Would his body be able to withstand the NBA season? Would he be able to play in the post? Would he be quick enough to defend on the perimeter? All these questions. And then as a rookie, it became pretty clear that McDaniels had the NBA body and he was willing to learn and improve and get better. And he was a good defender. That's what he showed as a rookie. He didn't shoot the ball all that well. I mean, he shot spot up threes pretty well as a rookie, but he didn't do much else. He didn't put the ball on the floor much, didn't get to the free throw line, didn't show much aggressiveness on offense, and the Wolves didn't ask him to do anything. But just the block rate, some of that stuff as a rookie was really impressive. The 3.4% block rate, steal rate of 1.1, Again, the spot up 3-point shooting was good. He was 36.4% as a rookie, and the Wolves really didn't ask him to do anything else. He ended up starting some late in the season, started 27 games as a rookie. Again, as a 20-year-old, his birthday is not until September. So he had just turned 20 when the season started that year. The season started later. So I guess he was a few months into being 20 years old, but he hasn't turned 22 currently until this fall, right before the start of his third season in the NBA. And then this year, the Wolves asked him to do a lot more. He really only started when there were some injuries to Jared Vanderbilt. He started some games when Patrick Beverley sat out. He started when Anthony Edwards sat out. He was kind of the guy that got bumped into the lineup more often than not. Occasionally, it was Malik Beasley. But he played 70 games, started 31. And the per-game numbers all obviously went up. He played only a little bit more in terms of minutes per game. But because he became more comfortable at the NBA level and the Wolves asked him to do more with the ball in his hands, the per-game numbers went up. The scoring average went up to 9.2 points per game. The overall shooting was better. He shot two-point shots much better, 58% versus 54% as a rookie. He didn't shoot it as well from three, but he also, again, was trying to be more aggressive. He got to the free throw line more frequently. He shot his free throws much better. Weirdly, he was a 60% free throw shooter as a rookie. He was over 80% in his second season, and the free throw rate was up a tick as well. So all things considered, the offensive efficiency was pretty well in line, and we saw the steal rate go up on the other end of the floor. We saw the rebound rate tick up ever so slightly overall, and especially on the offensive end of the floor. But perhaps more importantly, he just overall looked more comfortable and more confident. And he had these moments similar to the final game of the season for him in the playoffs, game six against the Grizzlies, where he just kind of looked like he belonged. And there were still those moments as a rookie, and there's a reason people were really excited about his two-way potential after his rookie season. But he just seemed more like a true two-way player instead of just a really kind of rangy, long, athletic player who could occasionally hit an open three. Remember, last year in the Summer League in Las Vegas, the Wolves put the ball in his hands and said, hey, initiate for yourself, for others. Show us you can play make. Do these things that I think the comparison is thrown out there. And I wouldn't say tongue in cheek, but obviously like a little over the top by Chris Finch last summer. He mentioned Scottie Pippen in the same breath as Jaden McDaniels, which, you know, is crazy, right? We're talking about a Hall of Famer, one of the better players of the last several decades. And, but like the two way ability and the size combined with the ability to distribute and to initiate offense, to get his own baskets when given the opportunity, that is a really tantalizing combination. And he had these moments where it was like, oh, wait a minute, he can do this. He scored 16 points in consecutive games in early March during that stretch where the Wolves beat some bad teams, Oklahoma City, Portland, et cetera. And he made a couple of threes in consecutive games. He had that 5 3-pointer game in the win at Cleveland back at the end of February. It was kind of in that stretch. He was really impressive. And then he got banged up a little bit, missed a stretch of games in mid-late March. But of course, what everyone's left with here for the offseason was the game six performance against the Grizzlies. 24 points on 8 of 9 shooting, 5 of 6 on 3-point attempts, got to the line 4 times, 4 rebounds, and a block. A really, really impactful final game of the season. And that's the lasting memory, right? That's what sticks in our minds is the Jaden McDaniels outstanding game six and the terrible game six for D'Angelo Russell. That's what we're talking about now. We're talking about, can the Wolves trade D'Lo and is Jaden McDaniels a superstar? That's the recency bias thing. We have to acknowledge that. But still, I mean, don't forget about the game one performance for Jaden McDaniels, 15-7 in that game. He got into some foul trouble, which limited his minutes a little bit. And then, of course, in between games one and game six, he wasn't good. I mean, he was what? 5 of 19 from the floor in the games in between. So essentially 25% from the field. He was 3 of 11 on 3-point attempts in between games one and game six. And that is kind of the second year thing with Jaden McDaniels, right? It's the inconsistency. It's also the way the Wolves operate offense. He was never a focal point, except for at times when he was on the floor with the bench unit or games where he did feel comfortable and got hot from three. You could tell he was more willing to pull the trigger. There was that stretch of games again in January, February, March, where he was just really comfortable and made a ton of threes. He was a different player. This is a rudimentary, I guess, arbitrary is maybe a better word, an arbitrary start point, but call it January 1st. I mean, he was just a lot more comfortable. And really, it started in late December. Look at the first 6 to 8 weeks of last season. He was the same guy he was as a rookie, essentially, where he had a handful of double-digit scoring games, didn't do a lot on the glass, was just kind of there defensively and did a good, not great job. As the season wore on, the two-way potential continued to kind of rise. And it was more obvious that, like, hey, this is really there. This is really, this could really happen. I want to hit a couple of other interesting Jaden McDaniels stats and thoughts here as we close out the show for today. So we're going to do that here next. First, though, let's talk about our friends over at Built Bar. Summer is coming. It's almost here. And in the summer, you're going to need some food on the go. Built Bars are the perfect snack to take with you on family vacations. Throw them in your bags and your kids' backpacks. Make sure that everyone has a bar so you're fueled for your summer adventures. The best part about Built Bars is that they're healthy and delicious. No more sacrificing delicious food for health. With Built Bar, you can have both, and it's easy. All you have to do is go to Built.com and order now. All Built Bars and Puffs are covered in 100% real chocolate. That means with Built Bar, you can eat healthy and actually enjoy doing it. Plus, Built Puffs only have 140 calories. You absolutely have to try them. They're delicious. Most Built Bars have just 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 net carbs, plus 17 grams of protein. Compare that to your average candy bar, which usually has around 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. Go to Built.com to get all your favorites like banana cream pie, raspberry, double chocolate, and so many more. They're all delicious, and new flavors are coming out all the time. Check them out at Built.com. Again, go to Built.com. You can use our promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your order. Again, promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, let's wrap up the Jaden McDaniels conversation. Again, I think the way he finished the season is the reason why the Wolves have to feel so comfortable and confident with him going into next year. And I do think, actually, let's get to the macro view last. I want to hit a couple of quick lineup things. Interestingly, the lineup data for Jaden McDaniels hasn't, well, maybe this isn't that surprising, but remember, he mostly came off the bench and he saw a lot of his minutes alongside, like, say, Malik Beasley. For stretches in the year, it was Jalen Noel. There were stretches against Torian Prince, Naz Reid. All of those numbers in terms of net rating are far worse than when he got to play with the starters. And I guess that's not surprising because, by definition, your starters are your better players. We know the Wolves had a really good starting unit. That core five, the preferred starting lineup, Patrick Beverley, Anthony Edwards, D'Angelo Russell, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Jared Vanderbilt, that was the league's best five-man starting unit for a very long time. It still finished the year as one of the league's better five-man units. But all those numbers, all those guys had solid net ratings with Jaden McDaniels as well. So you can lump him in. He would have been the next guy, right? He was a better, more consistent bench player this season than Malik Beasley was. And Malik was supposed to be that sixth man, that microwave scorer, that guy off the bench, and he just didn't come in the right shape. And we'll talk more about him. I think that's tomorrow. I think that's Thursday's show. But when it comes to McDaniels, you look at all the lineup data. I mean, I was looking at two-man data. His best minutes were with Patrick Beverley, Anthony Edwards, Karl-Anthony Towns, of course, Jared Vanderbilt. Those were all plus net rating numbers for him, even D'Angelo Russell. And all the ones I listed earlier were all negative net ratings because those lineups in general weren't as successful. Jaden also wasn't being asked to do too much when he was with Karl-Anthony Towns, when he was with Anthony Edwards. He could stand in the corner or more often stand on the wing and get an open three-point attempt or pump fake and drive. As a rookie, we did not see him pump fake and drive. We saw him mostly just shoot spot-up threes, which he was good at as a rookie, 36%+. We saw him pump fake into difficult contested mid-range jumpers. That was essentially removed from his game this year. The decision-making, which I alluded to earlier, got so much better as his second season went on. You look at the percentage of shots he was shooting from outside 16 feet, it plummeted this year. He shot almost half as many shots from the 16 foot to the 3-point line range. The mid to long range 2-pointers went way down this year for him. And he shot them better when he did shoot them, by the way. But it was a very, very small number of his shot attempts came from outside 16 feet. That wasn't a three. That was something he did maybe once a game as a rookie where he dribbled into a tough contested two. And now he's either shooting the three, he's swinging the ball, or he's driving. The decision-making is much quicker. And Chris Finch has talked about this before. You know, don't be rushed, but make that quick decision. Whatever you do, make that decision quickly. You're going to swing the ball. You're going to shoot it. You're going to drive. Don't hold the ball. Don't dribble into a contested long-range two, or contested long two. Be more rapid with your decision-making. Be crisper with your decision-making. And we saw that from Jaden McDaniels as the year wore on. And that, to me, is really impressive and a very, very good sign. I'll admit, I wouldn't say I was dubious after his rookie year. I thought the hype was a little bit, I think the idea of a long, rangy, athletic, very, very talented player after his rookie year was maybe a little bit much, because I didn't know if the shooting was sustainable. And sure enough, the 3-point percentage did come down 5 points this year, roughly. I was worried, but I am actually much more encouraged after the season, even though the 3-point number did dip. But for all the reasons I just listed, I feel much better about him becoming I shouldn't say this is his floor, but I think the most realistic scenario, the most likely scenario for Jaden McDaniels is as a really good starter. And that's important. Even if he's not a true star, you need solid starters as part of your core. And there's certainly star potential. The ceiling is still there for him to be a superstar. That can happen. It's always, that's never the most likely scenario. But there's absolutely a really tantalizing ceiling there for Jaden McDaniels. And my last point would be, as I mentioned earlier, the D'Lo, for opposite reasons than Jaden McDaniels, these two kind of parallel lines of discourse, they're not technically aligned, but they kind of are because of the way the season ended for opposite reasons in Game 6, and also because D'Lo has 1 year left on his deal, and the Timberwolves probably are not going to give him a max contract extension. Jaden McDaniels has 2 years left on his rookie deal, and is he the next guy who gets a major extension from the Timberwolves outside of Anthony Edwards? Of course, they're going to have to figure out how to pay both of them. So given that, are we going to be having this conversation, these two conversations running parallel? The most likely scenario is both D'Angelo Russell and Jaden McDaniels are on this roster next season. As we get into the training camp in fall of 2022, they're both likely to be on the roster. But will they both be on the roster 12 months from now as we go into the summer next year, summer of 23? Is the conversation already ramping up for McDaniels' extension? Has he become a full-time starter at that point? What does it look like for D'Angelo Russell? Do the Wolves potentially trade him in the next year? Do they let him hit unrestricted free agency next summer as a guy coming off of a max contract? It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. And I don't know that there's for sure not room for both of them moving forward, but it seems pretty unlikely that they're both back. And at this point, Jaden McDaniels fits that window along with Anthony Edwards, especially, but also Karl-Anthony Towns, a little better than D'Angelo Russell. So again, I don't think they have to be a linked conversation, but they could be. And they're going to be seen that way, I think, throughout the summer. All right, that's all we have for you in the show today. The rest of this week, we're going to keep going right up the roster. We're going to talk Jared Vanderbilt next time, and then we'll also get into Malik Beasley. I'll have Chilanga Langasin from the Zone Coverage and the CND NBA show on to talk about D'Lo. That's all upcoming, and then we'll eventually get to Towns and Edwards as well, and then we'll launch completely into draft coverage here moving forward. So that's all upcoming in the coming days on the show. Thanks again for listening to Locked On Wolves, and thank you for making us your first listen every day. Of course, you can listen to the show anywhere: YouTube, Apple, Google, Spotify, Odyssey. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at BBeacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. Of course, Locked On Wolves is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. A reminder, you can make your second listen, the Locked On NBA show, from the first jump ball of the play-in tournament to the last possession of the finals. Locked On experts take you deep inside the playoffs with insight and analysis affecting all 30 teams. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.